Yeah, Seminary, Science, and Service. So I'll start with the science part and get into the seminaries and service. So we all know science is a process of discovery, and that's what we enjoy doing, and we're scientists, and so that's what we appreciate. We want to understand the natural world or the creation by studying it on its own terms, and so we're just curious about what's going on. But as scientists, we all know that science can benefit the planet and humanity. Hopefully that's partly why we do what we do. We want to improve things. We want to find out how nature works. We just heard a talk on being better stewards of the things that God has put in the creation. So I think all scientists, to some degree, do this. And then there are particular applications that perhaps are more geared directly to this. We just saw, well, I didn't have fisheries up here, but I've got ag and forestry, food, I guess that would be pertinent, fisheries, engineering. And all these things can give us economic, cultural, and environmental benefits. And I heard a talk at an ASA meeting, actually, by a guy named Walter Bradley, who was an engineer, but got to thinking he would like to do something that was more directly helpful for people. And he was working with coconut farmers in the Philippines. It was a very interesting project, using cocoa fiber in door panels of cars and providing an economic market for something that wasn't being used. And I just thought that was really cool, and I'd like to do something like that, and I was thinking about it. And so I think many of us, as scientists, we also sometimes have these opportunities to serve with an explicit Christian awareness, perhaps in a way that I hope to illustrate here a little bit. So what happened was, I met some missionaries, John and Nancy McKeith, when I was taking actually a leave of absence, spent some time with my mom and my wife's mom. And they've lived in Central America for 35, 40 years there. They're older than I am, and so they've been there for a long time. And they, he bought a farm, and we're actually near his farm site. People in Honduras farm anywhere and everywhere on hillsides and go forest products and coffee and everything else on the hillsides. And he just noticed over time, people come to Honduras, they'll go out in the country, they'll see a little house with a dirt floor, and they'll say, "Oh, you're poor, let us help you," which is fine. But his observation is there are so many things here. Can we help people develop what they have here already? And so he invited us down. We went down. If anybody wants to do a project, there are lots of possible scientific projects one could do there as well as here, I'm sure. But we ended up working with this. We had to start somewhere. This is a tree called Sapinda sapinaria. And in Spanish, in Honduras, one of the names for it is jaboncillo. And does anybody know any Spanish?
Small soap.
Small soap, yeah. So jabon means soap. And what happens is, the grandmothers remember people used to use these the fruits of this tree for washing clothes and for bathing. And so we thought we would look at this, and it turns out that the pericarps, the fruit portion of the seed surrounding the seed, are just loaded with natural soapy compounds. And this is what the fruit looks like in the tree. And so the missionaries, we've been working with different samples, and I have some here. And so I just thought, and then you can help me out here. I've got some DI water. You can shake it up. You can see there's no bubbles in there. And so I'll just pull out a few berries here, and maybe we'll kind of crush these up and put them in this jar. And if you want to look at the berries, you can look at them afterward and so on. So she'll put them in the jar, and then we'll have a little bit of just a minute. So yeah, we started looking at these. We ended up with four projects. Yeah, as I mentioned, it turns out these berries are full of natural soapy stuff. And in chemistry, we call those surfactants. And just to give us a little soap lesson here, these are our soaps. All soaps have what's called a water-soluble part, or a polar head, which I'm showing here. In this case, it's a salt of the fatty acid. So that's a typical hand soap, bar soap that you might get. There can be other types of lipid portions of the molecule. So this is a lipid, a fatty part. We call that hydrophobic. You can have different portions of that. But again, you'll see there's that polar head, that water-soluble part. And so just as a general concept of soapy things, of surfactants, they all have this, what we call a hydrophobic tail, or a fatty tail, and then a hydrophilic or water-soluble head, or a polar part, what we call it. And this helps the soap or the surfactant to be somewhat soluble in water, but this allows it to dissolve grease and oil. So when you wash your hands, you've got grease on your hands. This part allows you to dissolve the grease, but you can wash it away with water because of this part here. So they'll form what's called micelle. It doesn't completely dissolve. I'm a natural products guy. I didn't know anything about surfactants when I started this, but I've been learning a lot about surfactants as I'm going. So thank you for doing that. So now I'm just going to shake this up. And you can see, so you can pass that around if you want. But it's pretty soapy, and there's quite a lot of soapy stuff in there. So what we found is, upon analysis and so on, there had been some literature done. This was out of a study in Brazil, where they had done some initial work on this, but not a lot of. There's been there's an Asian species that a lot more work has been done on. Not much has been done with the Central American species. It goes down into South America, up into Mexico, and even into Texas. But it's the varieties are different. They're quite different trees. But there are two main groups of soapy things, surfactants in there. The first is saponins, which are widely distributed in the plant kingdom. And so these are interesting because unlike many surfactants, these surfactants are called non-ionic, or non-ionic surfactants. So most surfactants are ionic. We mentioned the salt portion. They have a positive and a negative charge. These are non-ionic, but for the water-soluble part, they have sugar instead of a salty portion. So you can see that here. I've outlined that here. So that's the water-soluble part. And then for the fatty part, it's also unusual. These are unusual surfactants because they have what's called a terpene. So instead of a normal oil, you may have heard of essential oils. Anybody here? So you've got oil of oregano, rosemary, lavender, tea tree oil, all those things. And so those are all terpene oils. Those are a little bit different than your typical oil. And these have terpene oils as part of their makeup. And so this is called a triterpene, which means it has 30 carbons. And so that's the oily part. That's the lipid or fat soluble part. So these are a little bit different than your typical soap. And the second main group are, we call them ASOGs, which stands for acyclic oligoglycosides. Sesquiterpene oligoglycoside. So you just use ASOG as the name. Okay, so again, they're somewhat similar. They have sugars as the water-soluble part, but in this case, it's a bit like a sugar sandwich with the meat being the sesquiterpene or the cheese or the veggies, whatever you want to put in between. So the sugars are kind of like the bread and sesquiterpenes in the middle. And in this case, it's only 15 carbon and it hasn't cyclized. So you'll see here the terpene is cyclized and here it hasn't. So it's called acyclic. And this is just another way to draw this in chemistry terms where we use the R group to designate the sugars and then you see the terpene in between. There's another interesting feature about these I'd like to point out, and that is the sugars. So the sugars are the water-soluble part, but glucose, everybody's heard that, so that's a very common sugar. But if you'll notice, the other two are a sugar called rhamnose, which is also kind of unusual. And we often find rhamnose sugars in biologically active products. So we've actually got kind of two biologically active portions here. Because we know terpenes, for example, terpenes, if you think about them, they often have biological activity. They're antimicrobial or something like that. And then we've got these rhamnose sugars. So these are soaps with maybe a little extra, a little something besides just being soapy, which is quite interesting. So we've done four projects we've got going kind of at the same time. The first one is analytical, just what's there, how much can we identify, and this and that. We're also trying to purify the soapy things, because in future formulations, you might go from raw soap berries, which you have in the bottle there, to highly purified saponins or acylons, or maybe for different kinds of yeasts. So we're interested in that kind of thing. And I'm just going to go ahead and I work with undergrad students, and so these are some of the students I work with. Ramon here is actually from Honduras, and that's been really exciting to have him work with us, as well as for him to work on the project. So I'll just point out some of the students that have worked with us. So I'll just show you a little bit of the first two. To look at these compounds, we use HPLC, high-pressure liquid chromatography. Cells, people got a hold of it. This is what I tell my students. They call it high pressure or high performance liquid chromatography, because that sounds better. But what it really is high price liquid chromatography. So, but it's a very good instrument for separating out different components and so on, and telling us something about, well, at least we can separate them out. And this is an HPLC chromatogram. And you can see here, well, these are things we're not really interested in. They don't seem to be the soapy things, sugars, tannins, there are other things in the fruit. So I've just bunched those up at the beginning of the run. But then all these things here, these are these different surfactants, and we find out there's a ton of them. But they're mainly variations on a couple or three or four different themes. And this is from a very collective San Isidro. So we've got multiple types. So, like I said, we have two main types of surfactants. This is mainly the ASOC region, and we have the saponin region there. We've been able to identify some of these things. I wanted to work with a standard and hoped I could quantify off of that. We worked with soy saponin, but those things are so expensive that I haven't been able to continue, but we learned a lot just in how to interpret spectra and stuff, and weren't sure quite what to do. In many cases, and so we learned from things like that, how to interpret spectrum. So we isolated our own, and this is what we're using to help quantify it as well. And so we can identify these things, and this is one here. That's the peak that's telling us what that soap is. So that gives us molecular weight minus the soap addict there for those of you that are chemists. Okay. One of the things that we found, like I said, they seem to have variations on a theme, and you'll notice there's a lot of these. We found that there's a difference between a mass of 42. So you'll have a base structure, and then it appears that there are these sugars, and they can be acetylated, and you'll get all these peaks with mass differences of 42. So sugars will have different OH groups on them, and they can be acetylated. So it depends on where they get acetylated, how many are on there. So you get this backbone structure, but then you get all these different little decorations on there. And you, in this case, you get them separated by masses of 42, which gives us variations again on this theme. But it gives a wide range of soapy characteristics. So soaps, I didn't know this, but they're often characterized by a measure called an HLB, hydrophobic lipophilic balance, and this changes that. So we actually get a wide spectrum of soapy characteristics within one sample instead of just one soap having one soapy characteristic, which is also quite interesting. We're to the point where we can quantify these. Like I said, we've isolated our own standards. This gives an example of the ASOGs, so we isolated a single one, which was very difficult to do. We get a standard curve, and then we just did total ASOGs, and it's pretty much the same slope. So I think we can quantify off of either one, and so that will help us maybe with some of the quantitation. How much is there? We've also done extraction efficiencies. We found that ground berries, maybe not surprisingly, are this group up here. You get a lot more out if you burn the berry material. If you leave the berries whole, you get less out, but you continue to get more out with each extraction. But there does seem to be kind of a limit. We only did 5 extractions. But this might have some future implications for, even if you use the berries for laundry, raw as it is. So a couple other projects we're working on is a plant tree survey. The trees now just grow wild. We don't know if some have more, some have less soapy stuff in them. People are asking us, should we be planting them? And what seed should we plant? So we don't know, but we're trying to find that kind of thing out. So we're doing that. We're also, as I mentioned, because of these saponins and their properties, MDA SOGs, they have some, in the literature, there's some interesting properties like antifungal properties and some other interesting properties. We've done some preliminary tests. And it's pretty interesting. So it does appear these are soaps with some extra oomph. And we actually think at this point that maybe there's a more valuable use for these than laundry soap. But it's kind of hard to say. I don't know where this project is going to go. I mean, we're kind of exploring. Along these lines, we're characterizing these different tree samples. We've done like 114 here. These are soapberry weights, so they have different sizes, different colors we're finding. And we find they have different profiles. So notice this profile is quite different than that other one I showed you, which had a big peak here, very few here. So that's another interesting possibility. What would some of the different profiles do? And again, just to emphasize, in the literature, there is some evidence. It's pretty sketchy and pretty spotty what has been tested. So I think there's a lot of room for looking at some of those fungal inhibitions more. And even in the seed, people have tested the seed to see if it could be a biodiesel. Being a surfactant, it can also help break up oil, perhaps in oil spills or something like that from the surfactant portion. So there's lots of possibilities. This has opened up all kinds of doors for us in terms of working with people in Honduras. This is people from the National University of Honduras, UNAH in Tegucigalpa. And so we've been able to work with them. 3 of them actually were able to come up to us. They don't have a lot of equipment, even at the major university in Honduras. So they've come up and worked in our lab. That's 3 of the people there. I've gone down there. I've been able to do some training. They did get an instrument here and at HPLC, so I was able to do some training for faculty and staff and even a student back there. This guy here, he and I worked together doing the seminar. He was a translator, and he also had done some work with HPLC, so that was fun to do, good opportunity. And also, the missionaries have contacts all over Honduras, pastors who've gotten involved in the soapberry collection. And this is one of the pastors, Don Roberto, and his family. The dog there, his name is Mancha, which means spot. So you can kind of see it. But it's just, for me, this has just been also just a great experience just to meet people and to go down there with the project. John has kind of set up shop at his house, and he's hired a guy to help him out. He's a Christian, goes to the same church. People come in, they bring the soap fairies, you know, they weigh them, they get paid. And it's actually, by Honduras standards, very good money that they get paid. It's better than a skilled laborer wages, what John is paying for the soap fairies, what people can collect, you know, in a day. So it's really good, and it's it's one of these things that's really encouraging to me to see how it has helped people already, even though we're just a small project just starting up. A guy who broke actually both his legs. He's a coffee farmer, doesn't have a car. He has a horse, he doesn't live on a road. You have to hike to his house. And of course, he was very happy just to do a menial task of de-seeding them because it provided money. This is another single mom who we met that was a soapberry collector that was very thankful. And I don't mean for this to be an infomercial, but John and his sons, one of his sons lives in the U.S., in Minnesota, I think, and they started a business that got all the licenses. They actually got an award from the Honduran Chamber of Commerce, equivalent of $5,000, which is a lot of money in Honduras, to help start the business. And like I said, I don't know where this is going to go. Currently, they're just selling mainly raw berries and whatnot. But I just like this picture. This is a picture in Honduras, and this one of these little cabs that you can take. So that's it for this talk. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to.
I think etymologically, is there any connection between terpene and turpentine?
Yes, there is. So turpentine is originally isolated from a pine tree, and it's a terpene oil. Yes.
I have another question. There's the sugar part of the soap berry.
Yeah.
Is there any exploration using the sugar? As well, I know that there's a huge market in alternate stevia and all that. This what kind of sugar is this? Could it be possible? It's also another source of income.
Yeah, well, in this case, they're linked, so you'd have to chop it up. I'm not sure what the sugars are, just the free sugars that exist in the fruit. There are no doubt free sugars in the fruit as well. And from our analysis, it looks like probably the berries, the pericarp, dried pericarp, is about 25 to 45% soapy stuff. So there's other stuff in the fruit. But that's an interesting question. The sugars that are on there, the rhamnose isn't typically one that you find as that gets eaten. But it does seem to have some interesting biological properties. It often is attached or part of some biologically active compounds. When you see the rhamnose there, it's a biologically active compound. So again, we haven't explored that, and we've been mainly on the front end of this, more analytical so far, but we're quite interested in some of the biological properties. So there could be, your question here? Oh, yes.
Oh, just a simple question. Soap berries are also edible, right? I mean, these probably are palatable.
Yeah, these aren't. Nobody I know eats them. I have ate with them. It does taste bitter. And if you don't want to get it in your eyes,
there is a Canadian soap berry which is quite different.
It's quite different. It's on a shrub.
Yeah.
And I have wondered about that as well. People have told me about that, and I bet there's got to be probably saponins or something in there. I don't know in terms of the weight proportion, how much I would compare to this. This is really high.
Well, it's a classic story. It reminded me of the work that Mark Fry started at ECHO years ago. Initiated this kind of research. I don't know if you and...
I don't know, but I've certainly heard of ECHO. I've bought seeds from them and different things.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. Okay. Because it seemed like the sort of distribution of this kind of information would be really appropriate to ECHO.
It'd be nice to work with them. I just get swamped with all kinds of stuff.
Course.
And then we're here at the Little University.
So this is really a fine example of what Christian universities can do and the leverage of capacity.
Yeah.
And
I agree.
And give students that entree into
research. and just
Martin has a name for this kind of science, and I've lost it right now. It describes this kind of research in sciences that's focused on human need, sustainability, and using what's around you. Sort of harks back to George Washington Carver's kind of approach to things.
More questions?
Did you imply that that there was use made of some of the church people or even the pastors to locate the trees? Or
absolutely.
Which is, I just, in my mind, it was like in very early goings in Canada, those interested in economic resources, when the ministers went out to do their mission work, they got them to keep an eye on the rocks too and tell them what they were coming. So I'm glad to see it's kind of mission work in reverse, if you like. And that's a tree there.
That's a different tree, yeah.
Well, I was going to ask, and I've worked in Central America. It's a silly question, but I was always impressed on how big the poinsettias got there, which were on trees. But that's obviously not one of those. That's a different tree.
Yeah, I can't. I know the name. I just can't think of it.
All right. Fat boy.
Okay. Yeah, but John and Nancy, they don't have just a single church. They're missionaries that went and actually worked with a whole group of churches called the Central American Church. So there's like 300 or 400 churches, and they know hundreds of people all over the country. And so it's been great because some of the pastors have gotten really excited about it, and they, you know, it's been a witness. One guy came and said, this is the first time, I always go to church, the church asks for money. This is the first time the church has given me money.
Last question.
I just want to say, Paul, I really think it's commendable that you're working in an area where poverty is well known, and sort of teach them how to fish. You know, instead of giving them money, you're showing them how to earn some money.
Well, it's not so much me, that's mainly all them. I'm just up here doing what I can do.
Yeah, well, that initiates, you know, an industry for that area. I think it's real.
Well, thank you very much. All of you.